Welcome to the Run Nerd Library Podcast, a podcast for those who eat, sleep, breathe, train, think, talk, and read about running, and those who are curious. I'm the host, Don Hahn, a self-proclaimed run nerd. I consider myself more of a running enthusiast than an expert, fueled by coffee and blind optimism. This podcast will feature running experts talking about their books, and enthusiasts like me who are here to discuss their books with them. Whether you're listening on your commute or on your run, we are happy to have you here. Welcome back. This is episode 4 of the Run Nerd Library Podcast. When my wife and I started Run Nerd LLC, it was important to me that we have a podcast on which the episodes focus on running-related books of all sorts. My hope being that listeners hear about a book that they're not familiar with and maybe add it to their reading list. I get to sit in the chair of the enthusiast while my guests across the figurative table share their experiences as the experts. Much of the podcast schedule for 2023 is already laid out. We'll have episodes with fiction writers, historians, nonfiction, first-time authors, New York Times bestsellers, and so forth. Our goal is to peel back some layers, learn something new, and have some fun along the way. Sometimes, though, we need to take in the gravity of a story. And in those cases, the narrative we explore on this podcast is one of deeper understanding. Earlier this month, we released a podcast on the mindfulness for student athletes as part of our Mental Health Awareness Month series for May. Today, we'll be talking about what made Maddie run. I knew from day one when creating the podcast schedule that I wanted to include this book. My youngest daughter, a former student of our guests today, Ryan Collins and Josh Wachtel, is wrapping up her sophomore year at Westfield High School. As a freshman, she was taught by these gentlemen, and they gave their students an option of several novels to choose from for their trimester reading project. Emmeline runs track and cross country, so she was drawn to one book in particular from the list. What Made Maddie Run? The Secret Struggles and Tragic Death of an All-American Teen. The more Emmeline got into the book, the more she mentioned it to our family about Maddie's story. Usually my wife or I will have already read books that the kids are reading, or will read along with them. Flowers for Algernon, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Compound, some of those come to mind. In this case, neither of us had previously read the book. Emmeline was partway through when we decided to purchase a second copy of the book for our house, and Liz started reading it too. Then Annalise and I followed. This is maybe the one book, the only book, that all four of us have been drawn in to read at the same time. What Made Maddie Run is the story of Madison Holleran, a New Jersey native. Maddie was a high school track and soccer star, great student, and well-liked by her peers. She came from a large family with supportive parents and a house full of siblings. We enter the story in Maddie's freshman year at the University of Pennsylvania, where she competes for her school's cross-country team and is debating her future at Penn. Will she run track? Will she transfer to a different school? She has a lot of uncertainty in her life. Moreover, Maddie is unable to shake a feeling of despair. She just can't seem to find happiness. The author of What Made Maddie Run, Kate Fagan, did a wonderful job of being sensitive to the subject matter while interweaving her own experiences into the story. Fagan, a Division I collegiate athlete herself, had struggles as a student athlete. She found a strong advocate, her athletic trainer, who gave her the much-needed support. You'll read about that as you get into the book. You'll also see glimpses of struggles Maddie was facing, represented through her communication with family, friends, and coaches. In this book, I identified with Jim at times, that's Maddie's father. I identified with some of the struggles that Kate dealt with in her world. I identified with many of the friends and coaches, and at times, I even identified with Maddie. At this time, I'd like to introduce my guests, Mr. Ryan Collins and Mr. Josh Wachtel, ninth grade English teachers at Westfield High School here in Westfield, Indiana. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Mr. Collins, if you could take a moment and kind of introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, so my name is Ryan Collins. I'm an English teacher at Westfield High School. This is my 10th year teaching. And I came across What Made Maddie Run in our selection process of the novel. We were thinking through books that we wanted students to read as part of the choice units that we were going to integrate into the curriculum. And so that was my first encounter with the story.
Great. I'm Josh Wachtel. First of all, thanks for having us on. It's always nice to get to talk about books like this and big issues like this, obviously. I'm also an English teacher, as you mentioned. I teach freshmen, dabble in upperclassmen, but mostly freshmen. And I've been teaching, I think it's my fifth year now. And I also have the distinction of being the head boys cross country coach and the boys distance track coach here at Westfield. So obviously, Maddie Hallerann was an athlete who specifically ran in college. So I kind of have a unique perspective on that. And I've seen kids dealing with these issues. And I think it's really important to talk about them. And I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later. But I think this book does a really great job of sort of dealing with the stigma of mental health issues and how just talking about it and being open about it and telling about experiences with it is really important. It can be really helpful to a lot of people. And I think that's why this book is so interesting and so unique and so important, is because it does that for so many people, specifically athletes.
That's a great point. And we are going to jump right into that after, as we jump into the next segment, and we're going to talk about in depth What Made Maddie Run. So we'll be back in just a second for the segment where we talk about the book. Okay, welcome back. This is What Made Maddie Run episode of the Run Nerd Library podcast. My guests today are Ryan Collins and Josh Wachtel. Gentlemen, before the break, we were talking about, and you guys specifically mentioned that this book is part of a choice that students can make. Can you kind of jump in and tell the audience what that's about? So, what are the options that students have, and how did you go about selecting this book?
Yeah, so as we were thinking about choice units, students every trimester get a chance to choose certain novels based on based on themes. And so when we were thinking about our adversity unit, we wanted to pick texts that we thought would resonate with students, and we wanted to pick a lot of stories that were based on true events. And so What Made Maddie Run, a book that I'd never even heard of before, was brought up in the discussion. And it seemed one that would be a perfect fit for a lot of our students. I mean, as we talked about and was alluded to earlier, a lot of students deal with a lot of the same anxieties and struggles that Maddie contends with in the novel, or in the book. When we were thinking about the unit, we framed the unit as a series of essential questions. We asked students to think about, to what extent does adversity change us? To what extent does adversity reveal who we are? To what extent is identity forged through overcoming adversity? And so What Made Maddie Run was one of those selections, and it was a book that when I read it for the first time, I sat and read it in a day and a half, finished it pretty quickly, because not only did I see a lot of our students' stories in the story of Maddie, but also it reminded me a lot of my own experiences as a high school student.
And I think that's one of the things we really tried to target when we came up with our book choices, is we want to have a wide array of representation of different cultural groups, of different athletes and things like that, because we want kids to be able to see themselves in the text, because not only are they more likely to read, but they might get something out of it beyond just a book that is really good. So we try to pick different groups of people. And for this one, it was athletics, but also, as I'm sure we'll dive into, the social media aspect is so big in Maddie's story. She talks a lot about how, Kate Fagan, the author, talks a lot about how Maddie would be slumped shoulders and be really down. Then someone would say, hey, let's take an Instagram picture, and she'd brighten up and pose because she was trying to put off this sense of I'm okay to her public, for a public persona. And I remember when we do book club discussions, I'll bring that up with kids and I'll say, do you feel like you know people who do this, or you do this yourselves? And they'll look around at each other and be like, yep, absolutely. And it never really hit them that they did that until we talked about it. So just trying to get as many people to see themselves, even if they're not cross-country runners or track runners or athletes at all, those are all pressures that kids, especially teenagers, face. And we wanted kids to see that it's okay to feel pressure, but it's even more okay to talk about it and try to overcome some of that stuff by building a web of support. And we thought it was really important for kids to see that in this story.
Yeah, Mr. Wachtel, you make a great point there. You're talking about the social media element of it and how you can sort of mask what you're really feeling for a quick snapshot, for that quick dopamine grab. Mm-hmm. And you can also, as you read through the book, you can also see the way that the mentality of the athlete or the kind of the culture of athletics also plays into some of those struggles, like putting on the happy face, putting on the brave face, putting on the strong face, because you don't want your teammates to think you're weak, or you feel like that's what you're supposed to do in those moments. Can you both kind of talk to that a little bit, like in addition to including the social media and then in addition the sports element of it? What are some of the things that your students tend to take away from that when you're talking about those types of topics in the classroom, in the discussion?
I think a lot of times kids realize that not only the things that they post, but the comments they make to others on social media posts, like even if you think it's funny in the moment to, mm-hmm. to make fun of them or insult someone or whatever, that could create long lasting consequences down the road. And I think that, you know, as a former freshman in high school myself, I never really thought about that when I was 15. I never thought about, mm-hmm. like, and not even on social media, just in general, how one little remark to somebody, yeah, it gets a laugh from your friends, but you might do serious damage to them emotionally that doesn't rear its head until decades down the road, or they're still dealing with, you know, down the road. Mm-hmm. So I usually try to talk about that with my kids, that the things you post online can be seen by everybody for the most part, unless you have privacy settings, but it's still out there and you can mm-hmm. find it if you look mm-hmm. hard enough, and that the things you do affect other people. Because again, it's just your brain isn't fully formed when you're that age yet. You don't really think in those terms, but I think the more often we expose people to stories like that, the more people we show them are impacted by their social media presence, the more careful they are about what they say and what they post. And I think that's an important lesson for anybody to learn, but especially when you're 15 years old and social media is everything to you, essentially.
And that's what's tricky too, is that, you know, like we're both around the same age, right? And when we were in high school, like social media, I mean, it existed, but it wasn't to mm-hmm. the extent that it does now. Like I remember Facebook was just becoming a thing, like when I was graduating from high school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Maddie's story resonated with me in a lot of ways, in the sense that, you know, every high schooler is trying to like fit in, trying to find their place. They're trying to prove themselves in some way, shape, or form. But I don't feel like we had the added pressure that we were constantly bombarded by these images of like curated success, right? Like, or like curated images of success that we were mm-hmm. striving to attain or like striving to kind of like emulate in some way, shape, or form. And so that's something too that comes up in conversation that we address with students, is to what extent like social media is, you know, performative as well, mm-hmm. like in that like people are posing in some way, shape, or form, because, you know, it's like keeping up with the Joneses. We want to be the best that we can because we feel like that this is what's expected of us by society, mm-hmm. by our parents, by our peers. And what's often the case we find with our students and with ourselves is when you ask yourself these questions, you often realize that the person who's who's holding this kind of impossible standard is often yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like for somebody yeah. as extroverted and as quote-unquote popular as Maddie, I mean, she's described as this beautiful, popular, successful athlete, incredible student. You sometimes think, oh, that person has it all, they're fine, mm-hmm. when in reality yeah. they're fighting these demons. And I mean, I'm not a popular it guy or anything like that, but I can kind of relate to that in some ways, because my personality when I'm around people is typically pretty extroverted and pretty bubbly and pretty happy. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are just like, oh, you're just always happy, it's easy for you. And I'm like, no, not really. But then when I'm not feeling as happy, I don't really feel like doing that stuff. I feel a pressure, and no one is doing it intentionally to me, but I feel like a sort of pressure to perform for people. And I think it's just important to surround yourself with people who are okay if you're quiet for a little bit, or it's okay if you vent about stuff. And that's why I think you got to build as big a web of support as you can, because different people mm-hmm. can serve different roles to help you out. It sounds weird, but they can play different roles to kind of help you be all together and be mentally strong and mentally healthy in a way that I don't think many people are, to be honest. And I think it's important to talk about stuff like that.
Yeah, to be your authentic self and to think about within the framework of the story. You know, there were a number of friends of the family, parents of Maddie's friends, who kind of sensed something, mm-hmm. maybe her own parents a little bit, but they might have been a little bit too close to it to really see the way some of the other folks in retrospect were like, you know, I kind of felt like now I could see that. I mean, that's kind of what you're alluding to as well, I think, with the people in your circle who you can trust to know that in those moments you're letting your guard down and this is who I'm going to be, and I'm going to give you the full story and maybe vent to you. It's pretty clear that Maddie didn't feel comfortable to express that to anyone in her life. Would you agree with that statement? And can kind of expand on what you saw in the text that, you know, maybe if somebody had picked up on, and not to point fingers or cast blame at sure. friends or family, but there are certainly lessons that we can all learn. And that's a big part of breaking the stigma and sort of improving for the next iteration, the next generation of being able to handle these things at a better level. So any examples of where you saw that within the text and maybe how moving forward you could kind of support the idea of, okay, when I see something like that, I need to at least have a conversation with the person.
Yeah, I know that at some point in the book, or they talk about how Maddie, like when she goes to Penn, right, they start to notice that she becomes more reserved and a little more, less of that kind of effervescent like personality. And so I remember that I think she went, like she sought out some counseling, but it was originally dismissed as homesickness, right? Traditional problems and worries of a college freshman. And I think that, again, like because, I mean, college often is a time of, you know, like identity formation, right? It can be a very challenging experience, a very exciting time as well. We naturally assume that like those experiences, those feelings, we can chalk them up to, you know, that transition, which is a large transition. I mean, transitioning to a college, university life is in and of itself a huge moment of stress and kind of anxiety and adversity. And so I think partly that's what happened in Maddie's situation, right? She was experiencing, they saw a shift in personality, but they naturally attributed it to this major moment in her life where she was entering a new environment, right, new experience. And so they didn't think much of it.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, I got the impression that, and again, not to sound like we're pointing fingers at all, because one of the big things I want to say is it's really hard to help somebody through this, even if you're trained in it. Like, it's incredibly challenging. And I think a lot of the reactions to what Maddie was saying was sort of like, okay, well, like you're good. You know, you still kind of have it all. Just push through it. You'll feel better in a little bit. But then that just was putting more pressure on her because she's like, oh, well, my friends all think I should be okay. I need to be okay, but I can't get there. And that is something that I talk about with running a lot, not necessarily in that exact context, but I'll have kids who are, you know, about to run in a big meet and they're really nervous, and then they get nervous about the fact that they're nervous, and then it becomes anxiety, and then they start freaking about how anxious they are, and they're like, I'm not, and then it just spirals from there. So one of the things I really try to say to my kids, especially going to big races, is it is okay to be stressed. It's okay to be nervous. In fact, nerves are good. Anxiety, obviously, we don't want, but if you're anxious, you're anxious. That's who you are. Accept that and then try to use that to the best of your ability. It's not always going to work, but if you don't freak out about the fact that you're anxious and you don't put all this extra pressure on yourself, you're more likely to be able to get through that. But at the same time, there's not like one template for how to deal with people going through these things and how to help them through to the best of their ability. It's just a matter of giving them someone to talk to, listening to them. So you just kind of have to get to know the person, and then do what you can to be there for them and let them talk when they want to talk. And the impression I got was that people tried to do that with Maddie, but they didn't understand what was going on because
how could they know, right, if she wasn't like openly communicating with them? And that's where, like, you know, we can approach the conversation. But I think like the biggest takeaway from What Made Maddie Run, and I know I heard students offhand talk about this in conversation, that you, like, you have to be okay with talking about it. And I think that's something as a society we're getting better about, is destigmatizing, right, anxiety, depression. These were things that I feel like when I was in high school, they were even doing a better job of. I mean, that's something that I struggled with, like, you know, especially in my adolescence and early adulthood. And to a certain extent, I'm still, you know, managing and kind of working through. But, like, we're more open, but I think that, like, it's about letting people know, kids especially, to know that it's okay to feel these things. Yeah. Like, we as adults feel these things. It's not something that you necessarily grow out of. Like, part of being human, right, is to experience these conditions. And that, like, it, like, even if it feels minor to you, or if you feel like you feel weak in, like, discussing it, that it takes a lot of strength and a lot of courage, right, to be able to talk about those things. And it's absolutely essential that you do so. And I know I've had a lot of like a lot of conversations with students who kind of like offhandedly talked about how they were depressed or they were anxious or they were struggling to keep up with all their school and athletic responsibilities, and they kind of dismissed it. And I encouraged them to talk with me, but also to talk to a counselor who's, of course, better equipped to kind of figure out like how to navigate the situation. And they always come back and articulate like how grateful they are that they actually, that you know, encouraged them to go out and seek that conversation, because it's so important. But I think it's so important, as you, as we've talked about already, that that students and kids know like that you have to speak up and you have to let people know how you're feeling.
Yeah, and that's where the social media thing comes into play again, because I was thinking as he was talking, I was like, it is good because we're hearing athletes and celebrities and musicians and actors and stuff talking about it. But then I thought, this is the bad side of social media, that we hear those things, but then you have so many people tweeting, who cares? You're a millionaire. You don't get to feel this way. And like, I mean, yes, does that person have a better life financially than me and they get to go cool places and stuff? Sure. But that doesn't mean that they don't have the right to have these issues. That doesn't mean they're not having pressure put on them. It doesn't mean that their feelings are invalid. And I think people, the anonymity of social media, it gives people, just like random people, the power in their minds to say whatever they want and to say things that are trollish in nature, but that has impact on people who are maybe not in the public eye, but are also going through those things, and they see, well, Anthony Bourdain is a great example. He's someone who died by suicide not that long ago. Everyone was like, oh my gosh, why? He had a great life. Robin Williams, the same way. Great life, wealthy, like that's who we are. That happens to us sometimes. It doesn't matter what's happening in your life. You can still have these feelings. And when you see celebrities go through this and you see people rip on them, even some small part of you thinks, oh my gosh, I can't talk about this because they'll do the same thing to me, even if it's not true in all cases.
Yeah, I want to unpack a couple of things that you guys said there. And I think one of the interesting things is that we're looking at this book through the prism of 2023 and what we know today. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm getting close to 50, so my high school experience was different than that of you guys, with social media becoming more prevalent as you were getting into college. We didn't have social media. We certainly didn't have cell phones that we carried around, maybe a pager here and there. But we look at the stigma of mental health issues at that time, back in the 80s and 90s, when I was in school, and it was not something you talked about. It just was, there was no level of comfort to be able to have those conversations really with anybody. It was legitimately, you know, just bear it and move forward and that sort of thing. And generationally, we're seeing improvements from one generation to the next in a lot of ways. And it is looking at humanity's growth. It's great to see that we can talk about issues like that. I mean, it was athletes. You mentioned some celebrities, Josh, but also athletes that came out with their own stories. Michael Phelps, one of the biggest, multi-decorated Olympic swimmer, most gold medals in the history of the Olympic Games. And he suffers from depression. Kevin Love, one of the star basketball players of college and NBA, same kind of thing. And then, you know, there was almost door opening around that same time where other celebrities came out and said, these are the issues that are affecting me. So as we sit here in 2023 and look at Maddie's story, and we talk about her family and friends and their perceptions of what was going on in her life, they didn't have the advantage that we do now with all these other stories that came out. So for me, when I look at it from that perspective too, it's the information flood that's taken place since, it gives us a lot better view of some of the things that we can do to be of help in these situations. There's probably never going to be the right answer in every situation. We know that, but we can at least continue to ask the questions and continue to be open-minded to the answers and just listen and care for people, I think.
Sure. It's just that simple sometimes. Like, listen to people, show you care about them, be there for them when they need you. Mm-hmm. That's not going to solve everything, but it's definitely a good place to start. And a lot of kids, I think, pick up on that in the book club. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of kids notice, like, I'll ask them, what did you learn? And they'll say, we just need to be nicer to each other, and we need to listen to each other. Not that we weren't nice to Maddie, but just, like, in general, like, right. We need to do what we can to help people. And, you know, that's a start, at least. I think that's something good to take away from it.
Even as simple as, like, checking in with people who seem, like, to be fine. Because often, like, people are just looking for that opening, right? Like, I mean, again, what we've learned from the story is that somebody can seem fine. Like, not necessarily any telltale signs on the outside, but they're really hurting on the inside. And so I think that's something, too, that just letting students know that you should also open the conversation, like, regularly check in with the people that you love.
Yep.
Because they might be hurting in ways that you couldn't possibly imagine at that moment based on what you're saying.
Yeah, the time you can give somebody could be the biggest difference. I want to reference a specific point in the book. I believe it's on, it's on page 155 here, and it's Maddie talking to one of her friends. And as she's talking to her friend, she's trying to confide in her, but she can't find the words she can't mention the word suicide, that she's had these contemplations of suicide. And for me, as I read that, and I'm thinking about, like, her trying to have that conversation, and how much deep pain she was feeling at that time, but just the inability to get that word out. There's a lot of emotional points in this book like that. Are there any that stand out for you guys, like, where you're like, well, you could feel that, like, just the empathy you feel for Maddie in that situation, and how that makes you think about that, her circumstances?
Well, the one with Maddie that sticks out, and also one with Kate, we haven't really mentioned it because she tells her story too, and she wasn't as low as Maddie, but she was still low. Just the whole lead up. I think there's a moment near the end when she's going to the parking garage at the end of the book, and she sees a former coach. I think a former soccer coach was recruiting her, and just the coach is like so excited to see her, and she just like, yeah, and she's like so down and just completely devastated. That really sticks with me, just because as you track her change, since she's so dynamic throughout the book. At the beginning, she's so like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy to see you, all that stuff, all outgoing. And just kind of seeing how much she's changed when she's at her lowest point, just absolutely devastating. And the whole, the reveal isn't the right word, but when people find out what happened, the reaction of her friends and family, and just how they're, number one, shocked, because they knew that she was sad, but they didn't know it was that heavy, although they knew it was getting worse. Just that shock and anguish. And that's always what I come back to, is the people that are left behind. Mm-hmm. And there's constant, what could I have done differently? I mean, I've had friends who've died by suicide. I've known people whose siblings died by suicide. And that's always what I hear them say, is, I wish I had known, I would have done something different.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't put that pressure on yourself. Like, and then the part about Kate that always gets me is when she talks about playing at Colorado, basketball. Yeah. And she's like, this is all I ever wanted. And then I got it. And then she's like, taking pills to try to make herself sick so she skips practice. And that always hits me really hard, because I remember when I was an athlete and I was like fine. I ran varsity occasionally. I wasn't really that great, but I remember seeing these runners who were so good, and I was like, why can't that be me? Like, I want this so badly. And they were going through stuff too, I'm sure. A lot of pressure that I didn't even realize it. And that always hits me kind of hard too. But I remember feeling that way, and I look back on it, I'm like, man, I envied them. But they have their demons too. I think that's something that always sticks with me as well.
Yeah. And I think that, like, at the heart of this too, like, thinking about the aftermath of, like, Maddie's suicide, like, you know, all these people who are like, you know, what could I have done? And I think what's so interesting and so important to keep in mind is that often the issues that, like, you know, we see this with kids, like, their sense of identity is so rooted in this one thing, right? That they're a straight A student, or that they're an all-star athlete. And that if they fail to, like, actualize that potential, or the potential that their peers have set up, or their parents have set up for them, they imagine that they're no longer them, that they haven't fulfilled their sense of who they are. Like, that's who they are. They're that athlete. They're that straight A student. I know that I felt that pressure, even though my parents never once articulated the expectation that I'd be a straight A student involved in all these extracurricular activities. I mean, I did student government. Yeah. I did theater, speech team, academic Super Bowl, things like that. like I felt the need to achieve because I had ingrained that who was I if I wasn't those things. And yeah. I think that Maddie, like, you know, she talks about it when she gets to Penn track, she realizes that she isn't the best innately. And then you see that kind of existential questioning that occurs, right? If I'm not this, then who could I be? How could anybody possibly love me? And she, I think there are moments where, I mean, obviously I'm just speculating here, where she forgets that she's a daughter, right? That she's loved, she's a friend, and that these aspects of identity are more important, that these are who we are.
Yeah, and I think I can somewhat relate to that, although, again, not exactly the same story, but for those who don't know, I'm the youngest sibling in my family, two older brothers, and my oldest brother got a full ride for academics. My middle brother was the first individual state champion in Westfield history, won 4 state titles, 2 of which with a broken foot. So I had these expectations to live up to, even though nobody ever said, you have to be Thomas or Ben, I did that to myself. Like, I was like, he's a great student, Ben's a great athlete, I'm pretty good at both, but that was something that I kind of felt like I was in their shadow. And again, nobody ever, no one in my family at least, but going back to the, a joke can go a long way. And even if I laugh along with them, there's part of me that's like, and I've come to terms with that over the years, like I'm good and successful in my own way. But I can definitely relate to the high school brain and the college brain even of, and you know, Maddie's because she's so popular and outgoing and well-liked and a great athlete. Mine was, I have to be as good as my brothers, or I have to be in some way great. Otherwise, I'm like the black sheep of the family, which wasn't true, but I still believed those things when I was a kid. So I can kind of
perception is reality, right? So if that's the way you feel, and there's parallels to both of your stories to Maddie when she's talking about what if she quits track and she's contemplating writing that letter and talking to her mom about writing the letter to the coach about quitting track, but then who will she be if she's not an athlete?
Yeah.
That's very much a parallel to what you guys were just talking about within your own lives. And I often feel the same way. Like, you know, I have to achieve more. I have to be, you know, I don't know how many competitions there are in this world, but any of them that I'm involved in, I have to try to win them, right? Like, it's just, if I'm not, then I'm not living up to my full potential. So there's that piece of it there and that identity that we draw from achievement or from success in competition. So I see that in her story, and I'm glad you guys shared your version of it as well, because I mean it just goes to show that we all are seeing bits and pieces of each of these folks within our own lives. From what your students you've mentioned a few things that your students take away from reading the book, including just being nicer people in general to others. What are some of the other key takeaways? Why do students pick this book instead of some of the other ones that you have on the list?
I have a lot of kids who are athletes who pick it because they feel similarly to Maddie or Kate, because I usually talk about how they identify. We just talked about their identity as an athlete, and you put so much pressure on yourself. And I think a lot of kids deal with that quietly, but now that they have a chance to do it openly, they want to take that. They want to take that chance. I've had a lot of kids who are not athletes, who are just, you know, typical students, who also have mental health issues. And I had some great conversation. We did like a seminar set up last year, 2 years ago, I can't remember when that was. And I had kids like share personal experiences with mental health issues and self-harm and things like that. And it was really powerful and moving, and it was like really emotional. And I think that just talking about it and knowing that there are other people who go through this is so powerful and so important, because you can feel like you're on an island. You can feel like you're the only one feeling these things. But the more times you hear, I'm going through this exact same thing, not same circumstances necessarily, but the same issues, the same obstacles to try to overcome, the more you hear about that, the less alone you feel. And the less alone you feel, the brighter the light is. And the brighter the light is, the more likely you are and the more capable you are, I guess, of talking about it openly in a way that other people can help you through it, at least to the best of their ability. So a lot of kids pick it for that reason. And a lot of kids just are like, like we talked about, there's still a stigma around it, and we want to do what we can to crush that stigma so everybody talks about it and everybody is willing to be upfront about this so they can get the help that they need.
I mean, creating that space was really important for us when we were thinking about our choice books. And I think part of what draws students to it as well is, you know, we do a lot of fiction reading, obviously, in English class. but this true story like really resonates with them. And we can talk to them all we want about like if we read a fictional story that deals with the same ideas, then, you know, these are universal struggles, universal concepts that we all have to deal with and kind of wrestle with. It doesn't have the same effect as when they read about a girl who's around their age experiencing the same things. And yeah. So I think it's been really great, the kind of conversation that book has mm-hmm. opened up to show students that stories can reach us, right, and that they can remind us. And I've had students, like, after reading What Made Maddie Run, ask for similar books mm-hmm. and looking for other, like, stories that treat the same issue or talk about the same issue.
Yeah, and there's so many athletes that specifically are like, I've played this sport or done this activity for my entire life. It is my identity, mm-hmm. but I hate it, and I don't want to do it anymore. And they are always interested in seeing that exact same mindset in another person. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of kids that feel like they're going to let everybody down if they quit. And even with, like, running, I mean, kids are always terrified to tell me they don't want to do it anymore because they think I'm going to, like, scream at them. Mm-hmm. But my stance on it is, if you don't love it, you shouldn't do it. Like, you're only young once. Do mm-hmm. things that you actually enjoy doing. Find your passion and pursue it. Don't just do a thing because everybody expects you to do it. Now, obviously, I want everyone to run. I think it's a great sport, and I think it's a great yeah. team, and I think the culture is amazing, and I think a lot of people have found lifetime friends on the team. But if you don't like doing it and you, like, dread coming to practice every day, don't do it. Don't do it anymore. Don't do mm-hmm. things that intentionally upset you and make you depressed. Find something that will give you some joy, and then do that thing to the best of your ability.
And I think what's really powerful about all of this is the idea that, you know, we as English teachers are uniquely positioned to have these kind of social, emotional, like, conversations, because, I mean, that's ultimately what we're hoping literature is doing, right? Yeah. Eliciting an emotional response. But we can often get bogged down in discussions of, like, the technical aspects of the story, like, you know, thinking about characterization, theme, things like that, that we forget that the ultimate reason we want to read is to make these kinds of connections and to, like, reach out to people and to understand that we're not alone and that, like, that we all, like, share these same struggles and issues. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I think that yeah. What Made Maddie Run has been a wonderful selection. And I would say it's probably one of our, like, that trimester is the most, like, liked.
Yeah, I think
out of the choices.
I would say kids find it, they find importance in it. I've had a lot of kids who don't like reading who are like, wow, like, this yeah. kind of changed me and opened my eyes to a lot of things. And honestly, if one kid says that, yeah, it's right. a massive victory for me, like, yeah. as far as I'm concerned. But I've had multiple kids say stuff like that, which is always good.
Yeah. And I mean, just from our family story, it was viral from Emmeline picking it up and talking about it at dinner to the rest of us mm-hmm. Reading it. And I can remember while I was finishing it up, we were on vacation. And I remember we were having conversations about things that were happening in the book while we were driving from the hotel to whatever attraction we were going to. And it was super meaningful for me too, because I look for books that often have some connection to running. When they said, you know, hey, you have to read What Made Maddie Run, I wasn't sure what was in between the covers. You know, it could have been an inspirational story about how she went on to be a national champion at the collegiate level and you know, garnered all kinds of accolades, but that's not what this story is. And it's powerful. It's moving. Ryan, one of the things you said was, like, you don't really talk about the mechanics of the book, but the mechanics work so well with this book too. The way that Kate tells the story, mm-hmm. the way that she brings in her own story and makes the connections. You mentioned you read it in a day. It took me a little bit longer than that, but it was very much a page turner. You know, I'm getting into it. And so from the mechanical side, talk about, like, what you see with this book that makes it work so well. What is it that Kate Fagan's done so well to make these stories become as powerful as they are?
Yeah, I think that, and just to clarify, we do discuss the mechanics of the
yeah.
book. I think that often, like in our other literature discussions, that becomes kind of the point of the book, yeah. right, is to discuss the mechanics. But with What Made Maddie Run, like, that social-emotional discussion is often what comes to the forefront. But we talk about how Fagan's story, and it's really interesting because, I don't know if you noticed this in the conversation, a lot of them will say that they didn't like, right,
yes.
Fagan's.
A lot of them will be like, why didn't we just hear Maddie? Like, they yeah. want to hear Maddie's story and not mm-hmm. Kate's. Mm-hmm. They get confused. So mm-hmm. definitely.
But we talk about, like, how that, you know, that, like, gives, again, that kind of emphasizes, again, that these are universal struggles
yes.
or universal concerns. the fact that, you know, we have Fagin's narration, but we also have, like, text messages and things like that, like, like notes and letters that are also put in the story as well, it always reminds you that what you're reading is larger than this book, that it's a person.
And it makes it so real, too. Yeah. Like, it makes it so real because a fictional story about something like this can still hit very hard because the themes are universal. But when you're literally reading emails and text, like, for me, you know, as a 31-year-old, you know, I've been around, I've met a lot of people, that really resonates with me, and that makes it seem so much more real. I think sometimes kids just want to hear the story, but there are a lot of kids that there are chapters that are a lot of statistical stuff, which is very clear and evident why it's in there, because, again, universal, this is not just these two, three people telling the story, definitely not just this one person telling the story, but kids are sort of like, bleh, boring, because they're not really able to wrap their minds around how impactful those statistics are. It's one of those things that I think if they read it again when they're 25 and they've met people in college or in the workforce or whatever, I think it would hit even harder. So I'm glad we're introducing it to them, but I also hope it's a book that people come back to later because it can hit so much more when you're older and you've experienced some of these things that are being discussed in the book.
The language itself too, what makes it such an easy read is that it's the language itself is almost like athletic, right? It's very crisp. It's like it moves clear, like smoothly from thought to thought.
Very accessible too.
And so it, and like in that language and that pacing, it also like shows just how quickly, right? This poor girl, like, you know, like went from, you know, ostensibly like being the best, like being the best or where she was, right? To quickly like having all these doubts and all these insecurities and thoughts. And I think that that contributes as well to like kind of the larger thematic points that Fagin's making.
Yeah, I mean, there's that passage where she's talking about in high school, she knew she was going to do really well on exams. She might miss a question or two, but she was going to score highly. Then she gets to college and they introduce the curve and she might miss half the questions on the exam. And she really has no idea how she did. You know, she missed half, how could she have passed if she missed half the questions? But she might have got one of the better grades in the class. And, you know, we all can relate to that, that sort of scenario, too, where we're in a new situation. And maybe we like to control our environment as much as we can, right? We want to control our environment. And then we get to this point where we no longer can. And it's maybe that, that trial point for us. I would imagine students see that as well in their own lives, and they can probably draw some going from you're taking kids that were just across the street at the middle school. Now they're in the big building with almost 3,000 students. I'm sure they're seeing some of those similar types of themes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that they sometimes pick up on but sometimes don't is that Maddie was very results-based. She was very, we won the game. I got an A on the test, so on and so forth. And I see that a lot in cross country and in track. Kids are always chasing times and places and whatever. And I really, I work very hard to try to get them to see it's not, it's such a like a cliche, but it's not about the end result. It's about the process of how you got there. It's about the things you learned along the way, that you're going to mess up, you're going to make mistakes, and that anyone who is always perceived to be perfect, that's never going to last. So it's all about learning things as you go and trying to become a better person as a result and not making the same mistakes repeatedly, but making the mistakes and being comfortable doing so. And I've definitely had, I've had some kids note that, that, that Maddie was so wrapped up in the result and the accolades and stuff because she felt like that was her identity, as we talked about, that she wasn't enjoying the time she spent with her friends and the memories they were making, which that's mostly what I remember from my high school athletics is not races or PRs or whatever, occasionally, but it's mostly going on runs with my friends and having a good time. And, you know, I'm still friends with the, most of those kids today. That's what's important rather than the result, in my opinion.
I know we, that's a key point that you made there, Josh, about the intrinsic versus extrinsic rewards of athletics or anything in general. Like if there's that thing that, that you're, you enjoy doing the workout, so you go do the workout because it makes you feel good, versus you go do the workout because you want to get that time. Let me ask you about this. Okay. We were talking earlier about Kate doesn't really express that either her or Maddie were in a toxic environment as athletes. We do see that that's sometimes a recurring theme in collegiate athletics. And we talk about how Kate struggled to find mental health help on her campus while she was in school. She had to go off campus to another site. They didn't really have that sort of facility. And we're seeing more of those now. There are athletic psychologists in a lot of college athletic programs now. But I'd just love to hear kind of your take from both of you on what that looks like. The holistic athlete today versus versus maybe in Maddie's time and going back beyond that, where, you know, it's a student athlete, it's a person and an athlete. How do we treat that person holistically so we don't get into that toxic environment?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, I mean, I think high school athletics and collegiate athletics are just different in nature, especially in sports. Like, I mean, comparing high school cross country to Duke basketball is like, you can't really do that. I'm not saying that it's okay to, like, you know, abuse athletes or anything. I'm just saying that, like, the pressure is just on a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
I think in high school athletics, I remind myself regularly that it is the awards and the medals and the, you know, championships and records and stuff that they earn. To me, that is a goal, but it's secondary. The most important thing for me is that they leave the program more confident and just an overall, they've grown. Not even necessarily a better person, just they've grown and changed from the experience. They've learned what they're capable of. They've learned that they are more than they think they are. They've learned that taking calculated risks is a good thing, and that even if it doesn't pay off, you can still grow from it. Those are the most important things to me as a high school coach. I think that in collegiate sports, even in sports like track and cross country that are non-revenue sports, I think, and this is going to sound like I'm excusing coaches' behavior, I do not mean it to sound like that. I think because there's so much pressure on athletes, but also as coaches, to get the result or they lose their job or their scholarship or whatever, I think that they fall into that pattern of not even necessarily abuse, although that does happen, but just trying to make, being really, really hard on kids in a way that is not conducive to good results or to, you know, an enjoyable atmosphere on the team. And that's going back to the results-based thing. And that's kind of an institutional issue, I think, that there could be a coach at pick any college, any sport in the country, but thinking about like basketball and football and stuff, you could be a great person, a wonderful leader, a coach that gets so much out of, that the athletes love them, they will play so hard for them, they will learn about themselves, they'll grow and become better men and women and as a result, but they don't win enough so they get fired. And I think that we need to get our priorities straight when it comes to that stuff. Because I think the more pressure we put on all people, the more likely we are to get people who react very poorly in stressful situations, I think.
There's definitely that trickle-down effect. Absolutely. You know, there's definitely, I mean, at all levels, I think there's room for improvement on that. And absolutely. Gentlemen, I really do appreciate you taking time to be on the podcast today.
Thank you.
We will have an After the Podcast special episode that will be available in June, and it's going to follow along with today's episode. And in that episode, I will be speaking with an athletic psychologist from a major U.S. university about expectations set on the athlete, the role of coaches in the holistic treatment of athletes, how universities are evolving to help athletes in a holistic manner. And we'll hopefully talk about some ways to for folks to get help if they need it, who to reach out to. Yeah. So I'll have more detail posted on that soon. You can check that out on www.runnerdlibrary.com under the podcast lists. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the Run Nerd Library podcast. Gentlemen, thank you for being guests today.
Thanks again. Yep, it was an honor. You.